Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. And thanks so much for bearing with me the last couple days. I want everyone to know that my son, Michael, as usual, went through the surgery he had with flying colors. He is home. My daughter-in-law was able to bring him home last night. They came here, and I fed everybody dinner so that they could just go home and relax. And he actually is the recipient now, we hope, to a new hormonal drug, I guess it's called, a hormonal something that will help the bone growth for what they did to his cervical spine. They went in through the right side of his neck and took out two vertebrae, replaced them with artificial vertebrae, and put a plate in the back of his neck. And now this hormone that he is eligible for will help to heal the work that they did. And in 2 weeks, he'll go in for an endoscopy to look at the site. And hopefully 2 weeks after that, he will go in for the second surgery. While this surgery was being done, the otolaryngologist who is doing the second surgery was there, and he actually cut out some of the scar tissue in Michael's trachea, so his breathing is not so labored, and he also put steroids in his larynx. And in his trachea. So the swelling should subside and his breathing should be safe for the duration of this 4 weeks that we have to wait before we can do the other surgery. But he's feeling much better already. I want to thank everybody for your love and your prayers. There's great power in prayer and in love and in the positive feelings of others. And when we project that to one another, our lives become better. And not just for the ones that we're praying for, but ourselves as well. It's often much easier to be on the giving end than the receiving end. So every opportunity that you get to look out for someone else or supply love and prayers for someone else, It's a positive reaction to yourself. So thanks again, and I will always keep everybody posted. Now tonight, I have to talk a little bit about this young lady by the name of Hannah Anderson. It scares me to think that things like this can happen, and of course it reminds me of things that I worry about every day, first with my brothers and sisters, and because I'm the eldest, and then with my own children, and now with my grandchildren. Hannah Anderson's dad was friends with this man, and because dad trusts him, Hannah believes that she's supposed to trust him. And there is no real news out there yet as to what occurred or why this happened or what the driving force behind this horrific crime committed by this Mr. DiMaggio. But apparently he abused and murdered Hannah's mother and Hannah's little brother. And in doing so, freed Hannah to go with him, although she was not aware of what had taken place. She was not aware of the fact that he had committed this crime. And he kidnapped her. And he kept her for several days until people recognized her because of all the alerts that are on the TV and all over the media. And the police showed up, and he was killed. Joe DiMaggio was shot. Mr. DiMaggio was shot 5 times and killed at the site. And a lot of controversy over why, what, and what for. But it was very clear that nobody, and I mean nobody, suspects any wrongdoing on Hannah's part whatsoever. I have a guest joining us. Hello, this is Reenie. Welcome to Reenie's Heart to Heart.
Hey, Reenie, it's Shelley on.
Oh, you're at an 888 number.
Yeah, well, I'm still at work. I have to finish up on a project, so I'm probably not going to be able to call in for about a half an hour. So I'll get into the second half of the show, but I didn't want you wondering where I was at or what was going on.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. Well, I have a lot of things that I'm going to talk about, but it's a shame that you can't listen because then it's hard for you to give your input.
I know. But I'll call in about a half an hour, and then we'll take it from there and see if I can, kind of jump in and see what's going on then.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. All right.
I can hang on for a few minutes and listen to you. So I'll listen in for a few. You can mute me back again because it's getting noisy here. And I'll listen in for a little bit, but I'll stay on for about 5 minutes, and then I gotta get back to this.
All right, sweetie. Thanks. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, hon.
Okay, so that was Shelley. For those of you who don't know who Shelley is kind of like my co-anchor, and she helps me with a lot of the information that we share on the show. Now, so it brings me to this. Here we have a young girl, 16 years old, thinks this guy is trusted and cared about by her own parents, and something happened between them during the day because there were 13 phone calls between the two, according to the news reports, but she trusted him, so she goes with him, and he takes off with her, and he gets killed, and there's been no talk or no reports from Hannah at this point in time. Apparently, there was some controversy over some social networking that she did, but they kind of believed that it wasn't her that was doing it. So it's very strange, and I'm sure within the next few days things will come more to light. But what it made me think about, and I have thought about this before, as I said, as an older sibling and as a mom myself, how do you keep your kids safe? It's scary. The first time I realized that once I sent them out the door to go to school, they were in the hands, in most cases, of perfect strangers. The beginning of the school year is here. And I think about that, too, now with grandchildren. I'm sending my grandchildren, albeit most of them are old enough to come home and tell me if something doesn't seem right to them, but some of them are not. I have great-grandchildren who are just starting school. I have a 6-year-old grandchild who's going into the first grade. And you have to hope that at some point in time, you took the time to instill upon them the fact that if something doesn't seem right and they're scared or they're worried or even mommy's best friend or daddy's best friend that they've seen at the house and they know mommy and daddy like, if they do something or say something that makes them feel, like scared or worried or confused or anything. They need to know that they can tell you. They need to know that you're not going to say, oh, what are you, crazy? Fred is works with Dad, and he's good friends with Dad, and you don't have anything to worry about. Why are you even thinking about that? No. Trust your children. If they come and tell you that something doesn't seem right to them, very often, they're right, and you have to hear them. Hear them and believe them. You can't put them in a bubble. You can't take away their freedom, and you can't stop them from having friends. But it is your job, our job, to make sure that you instill upon them that if something's not right, no matter who this person is, and let's keep in mind, sometimes, well, according to statistics, more often than not, if any kind of a social crime of any kind is committed against a child, it's often somebody the child knows. So I guess what I want us all to remember with this story, and we'll have to see how this pans out and what actually was going on and why there was any, I don't know, reason or thought there was a reason for him to commit such a horrific crime. Eventually, we should find out what it is. But in the meantime, it's an eye-opener for all of us to remember to tell our kids that if there's anything going on, mom and dad need to know. And if it is mom or dad, then somebody else needs to know. Don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to tell somebody that somebody doesn't seem quite like who everybody thinks they are to you. So that's important. I want to share something that happened to me when I was 12 years old. Summertime in Miami, Florida, and it was beautiful outside, and we were all riding bicycles. There was like, I don't know, probably 8 of us. And we were racing around the block. And we'd go like 4 of us at a time, and 2 people would, you know, say on your mark, get set, go. We'd race around the block on our bicycles. And a neighborhood friend, his dad, came out and wanted to race with us. Well, this man had come to my house many times with my parents, been to our barbecues, gone swimming with us at the beach. I had no reason to feel like, I kind of wondered why he wanted to race with all of us kids, I must be honest, but I thought, you know, well, he's trying to participate in something that the kids do. I was pretty grown up for 12. And we're coming around the block, and he stops, and I see out of the corner of my eye that it looks like he's in trouble. So I stop my bicycle, and I say, are you okay? And he comes up close to my bicycle and says, I'm fine, but a kiss would make me feel better. And I went, huh? And he tried to kiss me. And I just stepped down on the pedal on my bicycle and took off. And I never told my parents. I didn't tell anybody. That night, I parked my bicycle in the backyard and went in the house and just went in my room trying to contemplate what had just happened. Now, nothing really had happened, but I was 12 and I knew that he shouldn't have said that to me. And I guess I was scared about what could have happened and thought to myself, why did I let myself be alone like that? I mean, it was almost dark out. And I couldn't help but think about what may have happened or what could have happened. And again, I both my parents are gone, and I never, ever told them. And this man still came several times to our house. Of course, I would steer very clear of him, wouldn't be in the same room with him or anything. But again, I guess my mother always told me, I think I've shared that story about never riding with strangers or don't talk to somebody you don't know, and how the insurance man tried to give me a ride home from the store one night, and I said, I can't ride with you. And he was on his way to our house, and I walked home, and he was already there, and he said to my mother she wouldn't get in the car with me. My mother said, good, that's what she's been told not to do. And my mother didn't say, it's all right, you can ride with him if that ever happens again. She said, you were right, Renee. Don't get in the car with him. He's our insurance man. I don't know him all that well. You did exactly what you were supposed to do. So, again, it's kind of scary when you think about it, but we do have to be aware. And we do have to be, we have to prepare our kids for things like that, because who knows what happened in this situation. And now this young woman has to more than likely feel some or harbor some responsibility for what happened, even though she shouldn't. It isn't her. It isn't anything she did. At least that's not what it looks like, but she probably will. So I think the rule should be, just because mom and dad are friends with someone doesn't mean that you should ever feel uncomfortable and not let mom and dad know. So it's a big thing. It's really, really a big thing. And I think that you should spend time tonight, if you have young kids, even if you have young teenagers. This young woman is 16. So please, let's make sure that they understand the rights and wrongs of these things. And kids are a lot more street smart, of course, than I was. It's not like it used to be either. I think kids are aware that there's bad guys, bad girls, bad people out there, and I think they're a little bit more prepared. I listen to my teenagers talk around here, and in some cases, gosh, they know more than I do. But I do think it's important to talk about it, and I do think it's important to let them know that if somebody makes them feel uncomfortable, regardless of who they are, they should let you know. So let's send out some of that good energy I was talking about to this young girl and hope that she makes this transition without too much pain. Now, the other thing that has come to me recently is, you remember last week we talked quite a bit about the drugs that we give to young people. And it's important that we understand a little something about this ADHD. So I found a great article, and I'm going to share it with you. And so that we all understand, there is a dilemma at this point in time. And that is the fact that they are deliberating over whether or not a child should have meds or not meds. So, and it is the beginning of a school year, as I said earlier about the first story. It is the beginning of the school year, and it's a time when you send your kids out without you, in some cases without anybody, to brave the world. And that's kind of scary. New clothes and notebooks and talk about favorite friends and tough teachers have made their way into American homes amid the exuberance and anxiety of a new school year. But for the millions of parents whose children struggle with ADHD, attention deficiency, hyperactive disorder, the back-to-school swirl of activity is tinged with another worry: whether behavioral challenges will stand in the way of their child's ability to learn and succeed. Big responsibility, right? It's one thing to send your kid off. Like today, my daughter took AJ, the six-year-old, for his school get acquainted day and took all of the stuff that the school asked us to send over and met his teachers. And he's in first grade, and he has two teachers now. I remember when you had one teacher from kindergarten all the way to sixth grade. That's not true anymore. He actually changes classes now in first grade. It cracks me up. So just how many parents are grappling with these worries? 11% of all children between the ages of 4 and 17, or 6.4 million American kids, have been diagnosed with ADHD. Oh, that's a lot of kids. according to a New York Times report. Those numbers reflect a 41% jump in the last decade, with two-thirds of kids diagnosed being prescribed stimulant medications for treatment. Okay, now there's one of the big problems. The Times analyzed a 2010 data from the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which currently lists 2007 data on its website. The CDC will release an analysis of the latest statistics within 2 weeks, according to an agency spokesperson. We'll keep up to date with that, and I will make sure that everybody knows what that is. In the wake of that news came a study published in June that looked at an increased use of stimulant medication to treat ADHD following expanded insurance coverage in Quebec, Canada. Okay, let's talk about what that means. That means that if your child has been diagnosed and a doctor wants to give them a stimulant now, in Canada, at any rate, it's covered by your insurance once they have a diagnosis. Now, that can be good, and that can be not so good. They found evidence of increases in emotional problems among girls and reductions in educational attainment among boys. Okay, well, we've talked about a lot of this kind of stuff on the show. It's a tough world out there for a young person, especially middle school age. It's when they're figuring out who they are, who they aren't, who they're supposed to be, who they're not supposed to be. Very, very confusing. And just being yourself anymore, for whatever reasons, doesn't cut it. So they struggle to be very often someone they're not. And I don't know about all of you, but I know what it's like to try to be somebody you're not. Eventually, you have to learn how to be comfortable with who you are. And I'm struggling with that again right now at almost 65 years of age. I think that because I'm 65 and because I am not a perfect size 10 or even a perfect size 14, I get judged about. And I suspect one of the reasons that even though I have great references, I have a great resume, I've done a lot of things, and I've always been successful at anything I've done, I don't have a job. When I decided I didn't want to be retired anymore and started looking for a job, I'm, first of all, obviously too old. And second of all, I don't look the picture. I'm too heavy. And in some cases, people pass judgment on you for that. So I know that that's happening to kids because they're judged even quicker and more harsh than an old woman like me is. Not easy to not look like a cookie cutter. Amusing to me because it's not a cookie cutter world, and if you spend time at the beach or walking through a mall, you realize there's a lot of people that look like me, a lot of people that are not perfect size six, a lot of people that are not drop dead gorgeous. However, it's still a very judgmental world, so that makes the educational part of school become even tougher because you're so worried about what everybody's thinking about you and how everybody's judging what you're wearing or how you look in it. A lot of times studies come last. So it doesn't necessarily mean that there's something the matter with the way your child is functioning other than your child is being subjected to a very unkind world that we have become. Such reports have fueled increasing concern about the extent to which kids are diagnosed and medicated for ADHD, a condition parsed into three general categories: attention difficulties, hyperactivity, and impulse control, and a combination of both behaviors. In place of drugs, which can carry side effects including stunted growth, abdominal pain, and loss of appetite, some advocates for an increased reliance on cognitive and sensory techniques, although a panel of 40 experts from 18 countries say these psychotherapeutic treatments have yet to show any substantial impact. Okay, so what does that mean? That means they're not helping. That means they give them more side effects than they do results. That means that the pharmaceuticals that are given to your child, even though they may subdue them a little bit so they're not quite such a handful, is really not helping the issue. Isn't helping them be any smarter in school, isn't helping them understand more, isn't helping them be able to sit in their seat longer. It's just piling on more things for them personally to have to deal with. I think that's awful. I think that's a big mistake. The issue, experts say, is more complex than whether to treat ADHD with or without drugs and the alleged over-medication of American youth. Well, I would say that the issue is bigger than that, but you have to start at the bottom of the stairs, right? I mean, you have to start someplace where you can make a difference. And for starters, you could stop with the drugs and with the different things that produce all these side effects. And I'm sorry, but I think that in order to gain some control over anybody, you can't be fighting something that alters their personality in any way, shape, or form. In order to heal, you can't, let's look at it this way. Say you have a great big sore on your leg. You fell down in the gravel and you have a big sore on your leg. And you cover it with a giant Band-Aid and wrap it around your leg. And the Band-Aid doesn't fix it, folks. The Band-Aid just covers it up. The Band-Aid doesn't do anything to keep it from getting infected, doesn't keep it from anything. As a matter of fact, if anything, it keeps it from healing because you're no longer dressing it or addressing it. You get my point? So in order to make a difference, it has to be there for you to make a difference with. I'm sad. In the last 15 years, all the things that have been shown to me because of drug use for very young children who were overactive or had a personality that was different than their brothers or their sisters. And now many of them are suffering much greater than a lot of people would like to admit that they are. The concept of this perfectionist-driven, overachieving society pushing medications on children so that they'll do better in school or beat out other kids or whatever, it just doesn't correspond with what we hear from parents who will try almost any alternative to giving their children psychiatric medications. Editor-in-chief of Attitude, a magazine for people affected by ADHD and learning disabilities, her name is Susan Kaufman, and she's talked about this. At issue, instead, are biases against mental health that cause prejudiced treatment and a healthcare system that can't possibly cope with the number of kids and parents who need help. Amen. Amen. We talked about that 2 weeks ago at length. And mental illness is a challenge, is an issue, is a problem that exists in every neighborhood and almost in every house in some form or another. And it must be addressed. It must not be pushed into a corner like a dust bunny that will eventually take over the whole house. It has to be addressed, but it can't be ignored, and it can't have a Band-Aid put on it. So there's also a very strong myth that ADHD isn't real, that it's a function of bad parenting, that it's undisciplined children that need to be reined in. Citing research to the contrary, outlined in Judith Warner's book, We've Got Issues, Children and Parents in the Age of Medication. So what we're saying here, and what I understand this to be, and if you're out there and you're listening and you've raised kids or you're raising kids now and you've got stuff going on and you're trying both, you know, both scenarios with or without drugs, I don't blame you. I would try anything myself. It's not about not trying. It's about not taking the Band-Aid approach before you try something else. And I'm not just talking about like what they just said about discipline. I realize most children, when especially when they're very young, who do they want to please? Who do they want to love them more than anything? You. That's what they want. And they can be sweet. They can be gentle. They can be kind. They can be everything to get your attention and your love. When they start developing issues is usually when they learn more about you. And they know what, you know, pushes your buttons. They know what gets your attention. And that's how they play you. It's a part of the parent-child lifetime together. But, as I said, 1,050,000 times at least, it's your job to keep it organized and flying in your direction. And I'm not saying it's easy. My good God, if it was easy, I'd have done a hell of a lot better job. But I'm talking about it now because I've been through all of it, and I've seen all of it, and I still don't have all the answers. But I do know that if you have to achieve happiness and peace in your home through a pill, there's a problem. There is a problem. So, if you have to achieve peace and happiness and some kind of balance in your home with a bottle, there is a problem. So, all of these things are about learning to face things and address them without any outside entity like drugs or anything else that goes along those lines. Anything that changes you artificially is not good for you. Is not good for you. So, as I said, I feel very strongly about what you can do with your children. We've talked about this before. I've had experts on the show who talk about nutrition, who talk about food allergies, who talk about all the different things that can affect a child's behavior. Not just break them out in a rash, everybody, but make them hyper, make them subdued, make them anxious. Food does that to you. Food does that to me. It does that to children as well. So before you go looking for a doctor to give you the magic answer, try working on your child's diet. Try working on the chemicals you use in your house. Try working on the different things that, you know, are part of everybody's life. I've been in friends' houses that moms are such cleaning fanatics that the whole house smells like Clorox. everything. I had one girlfriend. They were Spanish. Her mother, if you walked in there, in their second bathroom, it was where she bleached all the socks and underwear. And you could be, my eyes would sting when I walked in there. Clorox, people, can get into your bloodstream. I know that firsthand because it happened to me. You have to be very careful with bleaches, chlorines, Clorox, Tilex, all the stuff that you take all the color out in your bathroom tile. Imagine what it's doing to you when you breathe it in. Just imagine what it's doing to you. There's a million different things that you can check before you go crazy with pills. Now, obviously, they're realizing, otherwise there wouldn't be so many articles that I've found here recently in regard to this issue. They're understanding and realizing that this is not the answer. They do believe, as I believe, that there is such a thing as ADHD, just like there is such a thing as PTSD. All of these things are for real. But all of these things can be solved in much more efficient, with less side effects and less trauma than the way we're doing it right now. You know that if you put a child on any kind of altering, personality-altering pharmaceutical when they're six, by the time they're 16, you better have a much bigger, much stronger, much more all-covering, every problem they've got kind of pill, because otherwise your problem just gets larger and larger and larger. Try to work on their nourishment. And if you'll remember, when I first started this show and several times since then, I have a little article that I wrote a long time ago called Heart to Heart. And I talk about nourishment. And I remind everybody that nourishment doesn't just come from the kind of food you eat or the kind of water you drink. Nourishment, what nourishes you as a human being, is a lot more than just food and water. It's the way people talk to you, the way you talk to them. It's the smells that you come across. It's the air that you actually breathe every day, whether you're outside or inside. It's the words people say to you, especially the people that you love. That kind of nourishment is just as important for your growth and your well-being as the staples, the iron and the protein and all the things that you grow up learning your body is supposed to have. Through the years, there's been a lot of discrepancies about what's really good for you. And of course, the reason it changes is because it's no longer natural, because now so many of our milks and our dairy products and our beef and our chicken are, for the sake of making more money, have been altered by man, and opens up a whole other can of dietary problems for a lot of people. I've had other folks on the show who have talked about that. In the very near future, I'm going to bring on some more nutritionists so that we can talk at length about the harm that can be done to your body. Again, not to everybody. And I know I've said this before as well. Some people, I can stand in the middle of a wheat field, and I love it. It smells sweet, beautiful. I have friends, two of my kids, Mike and Diana, you put them in the middle of a wheat field and their lungs, their noses, everything swells right up so that they can't even breathe. So it's the same with the nutrition from the food. Some people could eat anything. They could eat, poop patties if you put ketchup on them, and it wouldn't hurt them at all because their system is just you know, so strong or so immune or something that nothing bothers them. But then you have other kids. So before you fill a child with all kinds of unnatural, man-made pharmaceuticals that will give them more side effects than what you're trying to get rid of, try to work on their diet. And again, let me say this again, their nutrition doesn't always come or doesn't only come from food. Work on how you talk to them. Work on how you relate to them. Work on how your whole family talks to each other and relates to each other and their food and their drinks. I have a house full of teenagers who think Mountain Dew is the only thing that you can drink. It's the only thing. It's taken me over a year to get my 21-year-old grandson and his girlfriend to quit drinking probably a 12-pack of Mountain Dew a day. Why? Because they both, now their teeth are bad, they both struggle with belly fat, and they're in good shape, and they work hard, both of them. But they got all these side effects, and I said, just do me one little favor. Give up the Mountain Dew. Forget not eating my chicken and dumplings. Give up the Mountain Dew. And it's made a difference in just a short amount of time. Shelley is back. I'm going to let her in so she can join into the conversation. I'm sure you're all getting sick of just hearing me rattle. Hi, Shel.
Hi, Rainey. Oh, I don't think anybody can get sick of hearing you rattle. You're entertaining.
I'm the biggest rattle you'll ever have, honey.
There you go. Absolutely.
Go ahead. Did you hear anything? Were you able to listen to anything?
Well, I heard what you were saying about the Mountain Dew, and without knowing what led into that, I do want to make one comment because I was really happy to hear you say that. But there's a lot of studies showing now that soda actually causes more health issues than almost anything else you can do right now. Soda is so caustic to the to our bodies. It's extremely acidic. It's one of the most acidic things that people can eat. And you know that I'm an avid vegetarian. But if somebody was going to give up either soda or meat, I would tell them to give up the soda because it's that acidifying to the body. It absolutely causes different types of fat issues. Oh, and by the way, diet soda is by far worse than non-diet soda because of how they make it diet by putting aspartame and all these artificial sweeteners. So now you're taking something that's already not healthy for you, and now you've made it 20 times worse when you do the sugar-free version. So, you know, all the different natural teas that are out. And there are some natural sodas that are at least a better option if you just have to have soda from time to time. They sell them in Whole Foods and stores like that, and they're naturally based. But the carbonation still harms us, and that's what people don't understand. It's not just the syrups that they use, which are really just all chemicals. I mean, there's nothing nutritive about soda. So you're really just drinking fizzy chemicals if you stop and think about it for a minute. And soda has been attributed to so many health issues. As a matter of fact, when I was going back 20 years ago, this is what kind of started me on my path of realizing that we weren't really being told the truth. I was showing the beginning symptoms of MS, multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. They were starting to see some of the symptoms of MS because I was dragging one of my feet. And they had done a brain scan, and they said they started seeing a couple of the lesions. And they told me that if I didn't stop drinking soda, like that day, because I was drinking something like a liter and a half of Coca Pepsi a day, I was addicted to it, that I would have full-blown MS in under 8 months. And it scared me so badly that I stopped drinking the soda that day. And I have not had soda since. And within 3 weeks off the soda, I got complete mobility back to my right leg. But I had already started dragging my leg. And so I saw that, and I noticed a huge difference with other issues that I was having just by stopping the soda. And I was so addicted to it. I thought the soda was perking me up and making me feel better. And yet when I stopped drinking the soda, I noticed I wasn't having these dips during the day. I wasn't having these violent dips that every time I would have a dip, I'd drink soda, I'd feel better again. But it was the soda that was actually causing the dips. And then the caffeine would perk me back up again, but then it would cause another dip a couple hours later, you know. And I found that I wasn't on that roller coaster when I got off the soda. So
right.
I'm kind of glad that you brought that up. So.
Well, Well, I read an article today about the ADHD, and they went into detail about how now should it be meds or no meds, and it's a great article, but it's one of many that I've read recently since we talked about the pharmaceuticals for kids, and I think the trauma that's caused to parents, especially right now, the beginning of the school year, and the fact that getting a child that has so many issues ready for school is trying. And so they have no legitimate records, proof, verification, none of those things about any of these drugs changing, helping, rearranging the way a child thinks in any way, shape, or form after all these years. There is no written anything. There's no papers by colleges. There's no notable surveys or anything that's been done that can show you that introducing a Ritalin or, like I said the other day, I can never remember the names of all. Ritalin always sticks in my mind because it was one of the first ones that they used. But they have nothing that shows where it made a big difference. I have talked to moms, some very close to me, that have said to me, it was terrible until he got put on those. Helped him in school, helped him this, helped him that, I've had that said to me, but I have never seen anything. And lately, because of the conversations we've been having on the show, I've tried to find things, and there is nothing. And this article that I read tonight even states in a part of it that it says, in place of drugs, which can carry effects including stunted growth, abdominal pain, loss of appetite, some advocate for an increased reliance on cognitive and sensory techniques, although a panel of 40 experts from 18 countries say these psychotherapeutic treatments have yet to show any substantial impact. So, in other words, you know, it's not making any difference with our American youth, and the American youth in particular are considered to be over-medicated by far. So I did talk.
The American youth, just for the record, also has the poorest diet in the world.
Right. Well, that's what I talked about, is the fact that before, and I also gave the analogy of say you fall down and you hurt your knee, and you have a really, really bad, you've taken the skin off on your knee, and you wash it, and you put a Band-Aid on your knee. And days go by. And the Band-Aid's on your knee looks fine because it's got a nice white Band-Aid on it. But are you making the boo-boo better? No, you just covered it up. So underneath there, bacteria is growing. You could very easily, by just slapping a Band-Aid on a boo-boo like that and never taking the boo-boo off, letting air get to it, putting any more medication, cleaning it, or anything, you could lose your whole leg. Am I right?
Exactly.
So that's what you're doing to your child or to yourself. You're putting a Band-Aid on to cover up so you don't see the bad part anymore, like it's going to go away all on its own. And it doesn't. It doesn't. All it does is make the problem a bigger problem.
So we talked about the fact that I believe that nourishment comes in many forms, but food, of course, is the first one to address. But people need to think about how they talk to their children, or how they talk to each other, how they relate to each other, how the family relates to each other, in order to get past behavioral problems. And I'm not saying that your child is a brat and you just need to reprimand them. I am not in any way, sense, or anything saying that, because I don't believe that. But I do believe that, you know, a lot of these things added up together presents a problem. And a lot of times it comes in the form of a little six-year-old, a little five-year-old, a little seven-year-old. So then when you send them off, and my first conversation tonight, of course, was about Hannah Anderson, the 16-year-old girl, the family friend killed the mother and the baby brother, or the little brother, and then set the house on fire and took off with her. And
oh, my God, I didn't even hear about this.
Yes, it's been on the news all this week, and they finally found them, and he was killed. They shot him five times, and he was a friend of the family. He worked with her dad, and everybody thought, you know, that he was a good guy, and he did all that. Nobody knows why yet. Nobody's really talked to Hannah. There was some social media announced on the Today Show this morning, but it's come to light since then that a friend of Hannah's did it, just to keep everybody away from Hannah. And but it's, you know, there's so many things that you send your kid out to fare for themselves, and it's scary, Shelley. You get up one morning and you've been protecting them in the house, and you've kept them safe, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got to send them out with who knows who. So if you don't teach them at a very, very young age, that I don't care who we're talking about. I don't care if we're talking about the priest that comes every week to see why you didn't come to church on Sunday. If he makes you feel uncomfortable, you tell somebody.
That's right.
If your dad's or your mom's best friend that you know is like a part of the family, everybody loves him, everybody loves her, whoever it is, they make you feel uncomfortable or make you feel unsafe, tell somebody. And
one of the things that people don't do that they should do is listen to their gut. You always hear these stories when tragedies happen, when somebody gets abducted by somebody that they thought they could trust. And they always say the same thing. They said, you know, I had an uneasy feeling, or I didn't feel right, mm-hmm. or I had mm-hmm. butterflies in my face. You know, they always have this sense that something's wrong, but they don't listen to it because they think other people are going to think they're nuts or other people are going to disapprove, you know. But it's really, really important. It's almost like we have this sense about us when something's not quite right. And just because you
That's
can't
right.
put your finger on it doesn't mean you should ignore it. You know, and mm-hmm. you know what? Let's put it this way. I would rather look silly to people and be safe than try to not look silly to people and get myself in a situation that I can't get out of. So,
right.
You know, and you'll find that if you trust that little gut feeling, that little butterfly or nervous knot that you get in your stomach, you'll find out that 99% of the time it's going to be accurate anyway. So you're not really putting yourself in a position of being silly.
Well, and I tell the my kids when they were young, and I tell the little ones now, if somebody makes you feel uncomfortable and gives you like a stomach ache or a knot in your stomach, get away from them. Now, before
exactly.
we're off the air, I want to give everybody this to think about as well. This is a horrible story that I read today. A 10-year-old New Mexico boy lived in an abusive, filthy home and had tried desperately to get help to stop the beatings he and his younger siblings had for years faced at the hands of their abusive father. This is what his attorney is telling the courts. Then one day in 2009, prosecutors say he put a gun to the head of his 250-pound father and killed him in their Belen, New Mexico home. After years of stops and starts, the boy is scheduled to face a jury this month for the first-degree murder in a rare prosecution expected to highlight the debate over whether children that are young are capable of the premeditation required for such a serious charge. Experts say the boy, now 14 and living in Oklahoma, is just one of a handful of very young children in the nation's history to face such a conviction. I've been practicing law for 20 years, and this is the saddest case I've ever seen, said the boy's attorney. I don't know why this is even going to court. Martinez, 13th Judicial District Attorney, declined to talk about the case with the Associated Press, but he defended the decision to pursue the first-degree murder charge. We are going to court because we believe we have enough evidence to meet the burden of proof. The case is scheduled to go on trial August 26 in Valencia County in the courtroom, but defense attorneys wanted to change the venue and sought to have the 9/11 call made by the boy thrown out. Oh, God. The boy's attorneys argued the father, 42-year-old Byron Hilburn, had strong ties to law enforcement members in the area, and that might taint a potential jury pool. But a judge Thursday denied both motions. The Associated Press is not naming the boy since he is being tried as a child in children's court. If found guilty, the boy will be in state custody until he is 21 and must take part in a plan for rehabilitation. There have been few other cases where young children have faced murder charges, according to the Robert Schwartz, executive director of juvenile law in the Law Center in Philadelphia. The most well-known example came in 1989 when Cameron Kocher, then 9, shot a 7-year-old playmate with a high-powered rifle in a rural Pennsylvania neighborhood after the playmate said she was better at the video game than he was. Kocher was tried as an adult but eventually pleaded no contest to involuntary manslaughter. He was placed on probation until he turned 21. Now, how can they even compare those two things?
I just had the exact same reaction. Oh, my God. There's like no comparison there.
They give other stories of a 6-year-old Michigan boy found a gun in the house where he was living and shot somebody else, a first grader at school. And a California boy who was 10 when he fatally shot his white supremacist father was convicted in January of second-degree murder, saying the child knew what he did was wrong. The judge weighed the severity of the crime versus whether or not the amount of abuse and neglect suffered by the boy played a significant role in the father's slaying. Only 13 states have a minimum age at which children can be tried or faced adjudication in juvenile court. So they're actually, this guy kept loaded guns in the house. They tried to get the 6-year-old sister, she's not 6 anymore, to testify because she saw the shooting. And the one attorney said, here you had a 250-pound man who liked to kick these kids around. The state failed to protect him. That's the issue, and that should be the only issue as far as I'm concerned. But how bad is that? You know, here we're struggling with a million different things going on out there. Nobody helps this child, and this happens a lot. We talk all the time about telling a grown-up, telling somebody to help you, and they don't get any help.
Well,
it's
how
bad.
Is that any different than the women that are battered who finally kill their husbands because they're afraid they're going to get killed one night, and then they go to jail for the rest of their lives? It's the same thing.
Right. There should be some kind of an organization or a, I don't know what you would call it, but maybe judges that don't sit on the bench anymore should sit in a room and just listen to these cases and try them with some dignity and some empathy and compassion for a child or anybody who's been abused by somebody, and they finally end the abuse when nobody else will help them. Because this is
a big issue
in our country, a big, big issue. Well, we're almost out of time, though. I also updated everybody on Michael and thanked everybody
Wonderful.
For all their love and prayers. Yeah, he's doing pretty good. Now he's going to take a new hormonal thing to help his bones heal, that he's been okay through insurance to be able to have that. So we're excited about that as well. So I'm glad you joined us at the end, and we will be on by ourselves tomorrow. Izzy won't be on until next week, so I will talk to you tomorrow night. And from my heart to yours, everybody, this is Renee. Good night, and God bless. Good night, Shell.
Good night, Renee.